We are recording. Welcome to week three of our four-week series. And there was only one question submitted this week, and so we'll spend a bunch of time on that, and then I'll leave some time at the end open to other possibilities. And Trina wrote in, and thank you, Trina, for always submitting really interesting questions, but this time it wasn't a question. It was a single word, insecurity. So, without further ado, this is a, I'm so glad that this subject is put on the table right now. And for the person that just got on, we're talking about insecurity. So
thank
most
you.
People feel insecure. Often a low-grade, persistent sense of I'm not worthy, good enough, pretty enough, thin, smart enough, or whatever your version of insecurity is. And are these things true? Well, maybe sometimes. Probably not, though. Einstein, one of my favorite people to quote, has a great one. Reality is an illusion, but an extremely persistent one. Now, I have to admit, in pondering the subject before we got on the call, knowing that I'd be facilitating it, I started taking my own life into consideration, and I know I'm an anomaly. I mean, I have moments where I feel insecure, certainly in high school. I was very insecure in high school until I grew breasts, got a lot of male attention, and then I was fine. I remember feeling really insecure during breakups, too. Every time I was getting towards the end of a relationship, I seemed like my self-esteem was just in the crapper. As a whole, though, I know that I don't experience much insecurity in my life compared to what I see with a lot of people, but I really like this subject also because I'm, in fact, going through one of the most insecure moments of my life. And it's probably the worst moment of insecurity in my life because I'm an adult. I'm not going through a breakup. You know, like, where is this coming from? So I'm glad it's being asked about. So how we're going to explore it is this. And everybody can hear me fine? Just checking in again?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
So I teach Zen. I don't teach New Age stuff, which would seek to help us get rid of our insecurity or let it go or replace it with positive thoughts. I also don't offer a psychological approach. And many of you know this, many of you don't. Psychological practice has us asking why. Like it seeks to help you understand where your insecurity comes from. Like, why has insecurity become my reality? Which is great, you know. The psychological practice will help you find explanations of where your insecurity comes from, maybe genetics or conditioning or childhood trauma, life circumstance, heck, you know, the weather, for crying out loud, right? Like, it just comes from, if you start to dig into it, places like some kid on the playground says you're stupid and you let it in. The next thing you know, you have an automatic thought that you carry around oftentimes for the rest of your life, that you're stupid or that you're worthless or you're fill in the blank, right? And psychological asking of why you have this, it's interesting information, but the why, you know, what really does it accomplish? You know, it helps also, though, to know whatever that insecurity is. Like, insecurity is bad thoughts coming from wherever they come from, right? Where they come from in Zen practice doesn't matter so much, but let's at least identify what insecurity is. It's bad thoughts, right, that are kind of automatic, not very real, but very, very persistent and maddening, and they're just kind of repeating over and over again. And we can get to the point where we even find insecurity to be familiar, or these negative thoughts familiar. We find odd sense of comfort in how familiar they are. It's like, this is who I am. My favorite analogy is like it's a stinky teddy bear, right? It's a comforting, stinky thing. And if somebody comes along and tries to take your insecurity away, or it's like taking your stinky teddy bear away from you. It's like, I dare you, right? It's just not going to happen. So here's what we're going to do. I'm not New Age, like I said. We're not going to try to get rid of insecurity. This is not psychology. We're not going to understand why we have these insecure thoughts. Zen is definitely very different. Zen is about living the journey of your life, and here in these calls, we do it together. So our Zen practice is just of course, we're going to speak to the voice of insecurity and just see what comes up. And Zen is merely just consciousness around the subject, just being curious about it. Now, before we go down this rabbit hole, though, and I don't know if, Trina, you want to be in the hot seat. Just contemplate it if somebody is, like, jumping up and down, like, oh, yes, I love this subject. I want to be in the hot seat, too. But to be fair, let's just know that life is dualistic, yin-yang, right? We have insecure thoughts, bad feelings about ourselves, but we have contradicting moments of insecurity because we also experience moments of well-being, of feeling secure and having positive thoughts. Like, consider actually that even someone with mental illness has moments of sanity. And that's kind of a big statement. Even people with mental illness have moments of sanity. So even people that have insecure thoughts or insecure people, they have moments where they feel very secure. And those moments that we feel secure can often be a relief, but actually it inadvertently poses a problem. And the problem is our minds are so highly dualistic. And it is a problem because not only are our minds dualistic, we're very discriminating and judgmental, but our minds are also the same mind that senses self versus other. There's me and there's you, or there's me and my husband, or there's me and the kid that called me stupid on the playground. And the combination of that is these two together, being discriminating and judgmental and self versus other, these two kind of parts of our minds function and tie in together, and bam, what we get is the self is just constantly evaluating the self. It's like you're constantly being judgmental of yourself. And when we have moments of sanity, good feelings about ourselves, we judge those feelings against our insecure moments. And so not only do we feel bad when we have those insecure moments, but we then feel really bad when we feel bad. We feel insecure that we just even feel insecure. You follow? I mean, on top of our insecurity, what I'm saying is that we become insecure about how insecure we are. So it's madness stacked on top of madness. And we create all of this through this judgmental nature of ours and set standards that are very, very high for ourselves. And so when we have an insecure moment, it is intolerable. We feel like there's something wrong with us. And this whole setup, the way that our mind is so discriminating and judgmental, the way this mind works, when it runs wild, it's great for things like science or architecture or engineering or things that require our brain to do this magnificent thing. But when it's directed internally, the end result is we are just on ourselves all the time, being super discriminating and judgmental against ourselves. And then on others too, right? Persistently judging other people, paying very close attention to how other people are treating you, how other people feel about themselves. We just are so dualistic, like this poor, spiritual, not spiritual, good, bad, sane, insane. And then internally, of course, I'm a worthwhile human being or I'm a worthless human being. So I've just kind of given you guys a big overview of insecurity. I've kind of outlined what we're going to do around the subject of insecurity. Does anybody have any clarifying questions or curiosities on what I've outlined?
So when you said be very curious or be very cautious about what other people are, you said doing or thinking or saying?
Well, I know that my insecure moments usually come from some sort of external criticism. Like a lot of my insecurity personally came while I was going through difficult breakups with men, and they would say derogatory things, and I would let it in. And so we could dissect, like, where does that come from? Why do I act that way? But I find it just interesting enough that I act that way. And I think that most people act that way. I mean, you have an influence in your life telling you every single day, not that this has happened to me, but you're ugly, you're ugly, you're ugly, I don't care how secure you are, eventually it's going to go inside. And so even somebody who has, I consider myself not being, having an insecurity problem, but there have been times in my life where I've felt terrible about myself and felt very insecure based on my interaction with another person. Does that make sense?
I agree.
Yeah.
That's...
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so not only are we hard on ourselves, but we're hard on other people, and other people are hard on us. And so it's a miracle, that anybody has any sense of security in their lives, for that matter, or a positive sense of self. There's so much feedback out there, that's suggesting that I'm not pretty enough. I'm getting older, I'm not smart enough, I'm not successful enough, and on and on and on. And so, as Dr. Phil would say, it's not a matter of why are you feeling insecure, it's a matter of why not. I love this quote, Dr. Phil. Why aren't we all feeling insecure? And we all are. Even people, I'm sure Elon Musk has a problem with insecurity. So, but insecurity in Zen is not the problem. But when we feel insecure and feel like there's something wrong with us and that we feel that way, and we feel insecure about being insecure, that's when problems really start. Any other questions? And any volunteers for being in the hot seat? Trina, we can do you, but maybe somebody else as well.
Whatever works, I'm open.
Did you say that again?
I said whatever works, I'm open.
Okay. Was that Trina?
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions for anybody?
So when insecurity shows up, instead of analyzing where it's coming from, you're saying to do what?
Just be curious about it. And we're going to do the work of insecurity. And so...
say that again. I didn't hear that.
The why doesn't matter so much. I mean, you can get lost in the process of, with a therapist, dissecting your whole life and processing and trying to understand where it comes from. And it's really interesting information, but it doesn't actually make us feel any better. So
yeah, it's not going to change.
Right. It's like, why ask why? Maybe you've heard that before. And a lot of psychological practice looks to understand the why or where it comes from as a way to see it as to stop it somehow, or, it's because of my father, or because of that kid, or because of that situation. That's in the past, though. The only thing that matters in Zen is you and your relationship with insecurity as it exists today. That's the only thing that matters. So without further ado then, Trina, why don't we start with you? Put you in the hot seat. Allow me, please, to
speak
the voice of insecurity. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of insecurity.
Okay. Now, is it your job to feel secure?
No.
No. I mean, your job in this corporation is to do one thing and one thing only, which is be insecure. Feel insecure.
Right.
What are you insecure about?
In particular, or just?
Look at it this way. Trina wrote me, and she was curious about you. She wanted to explore you. Why is she so interested in you? Why does she have heat around you? Where does your curiosity come from about you?
Her curiosity comes from recognizing that periodically I just show up randomly.
Right, and when you show up, what do you say? What's your style?
Oh, what's my style? Focus a lot around, I guess the word would be body image. Like that can be a big thing for her.
Like, what do you say about her body?
We'll say that again?
What do you say to Trina about her body?
Oh, well, pick something. Like, you know, you should be thinner. Like any of those different types of conversations that would have come up when she was a child, like she was younger. So that's probably the first one. That has a fair amount to do with things like looking at relationships, like her relationship with people in her life, like specifically, probably men, like that component falls into it also.
What do you say to her about men as a president?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What do you say to her? What do you say to her about men?
Mostly that you need to be pretty, you need to be attractive, like you need to be all of these things is what I say to her.
Well, that doesn't sound so bad. It's like, oh, put some makeup on, wash your hair, you know, buy this pretty dress. Like, why? I mean, are you saying you're not pretty enough?
Yes.
You're not thin enough?
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting to get to know your language, I know. And I think that what I'm seeing is that you, as a voice of insecurity, you're not very, I mean, she's aware of you, but you're not aware of yourself. Do you follow?
Like
I don't know that I know that you know who you are as a voice of insecurity. You know, it's, I just want to make sure that it's you speaking, too. And maybe there's a certain habitual pattern of hiding you or shyness around letting you speak. You know, because of the big reveal, there's other people on this call. I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm sensing that you, as a voice of insecurity, you're not quite sure what you say to her.
I think she keeps insecurity very well hidden.
Say it in voice, so she keeps me hidden.
She keeps me hidden. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps me hidden. And from other people, but does she also keep you hidden from herself?
She doesn't let me speak very frequently. She has a way of kicking my ass back. It's the basement.
Yeah, how did it? Basement. Is that what you just said? Basement?
Yeah. Yeah. Where the hell did I come from and go back to where I was?
Right. So nobody's ever asked to speak to you before. So you're like, what? You know, out in the light of day, somebody wants to speak to me? What? Like, okay. So allow me please to speak to the voice of you, insecurity, locked in the basement, which is a more familiar place for you. Who am I speaking to?
Insecurity, locked in the basement. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So look at Trina on the surface, just walking around, living her life. What does she have to do? Who does she have to become in order to keep you locked in the basement like this?
Who does she have to become? That's a good question. She has to become perfect.
Oh, okay. And in there lies the marketing tool behind almost every single woman's product on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it's a lot of women, even too, but because I'm talking about that as a way to keep you hidden, you know, buy this product, wear this makeup, do this with your hair, wear these clothes, like trade this image, walk, talk, pretend. And then when you show up, probably hide. If they get to the point where they can't control you, then they stay home and hide from the world. It's like that might be the only time that you get to come out to play is, you know, on Sundays in dirty pajamas and eating whatever she wants. And, you know, it's just, it's interesting the amount of effort that gets put into hiding you.
Yes, but I think part of it doesn't resonate.
Okay, what does resonate? Like, tell me about your life as the voice of insecurity. You're in the basement. How often are you in the basement? When are you taken out? Tell me more about her relationship with you and the role that you play in her life.
I think I come out as the voice of insecurity comes out of the basement whenever her marriage doesn't feel like it's like super strong and solid. Like it feels just a little off. Like there's that voice of insecurity that comes about. I get to come out at that point.
Right.
But as far as like Trina is comfortable like going to the store with no makeup on and no hair, her hair not done, like that isn't where her insecurity lies. That isn't where I lie. That's the voice of insecurity. My role or my voice comes out when it has to do with relationships.
And then not thin enough, not pretty enough.
That can be, right? If the relationship doesn't feel like strong, then, yeah, that's where I start putting those little shadows of doubt in her.
Mm-hmm. So why is she curious about you right now?
She doesn't like me. it's not who she most of the time feels like she is. She usually feels Trina usually feels pretty comfortable in her own skin, and Trina likes to be the support for several people, and when I come out, that goes away.
Okay, so what is your wisdom? Like, this is your chance to really speak your mind about what you offer. Because every voice has something to offer. There's a delusion to every voice. You know, even love is blind, love can be stupid, right? And there's a wisdom to love. And similar, you know, there's a delusion to you, and there's a wisdom. So actually, let's start talking about the delusion. Like, how can you cause problems for Trina or for people in general?
I can say things that aren't accurate. Can't say things that are obviously not accurate.
Right.
There is no such thing as perfection anywhere, anytime, any place. Like, there is no such thing. Like, shall we name the ways that it's not helpful?
You know, I'm just even looking at the language, like not thin enough. I mean, somebody could be 100 pounds overweight and they're not sin, that's true. But then you have the word enough, like enough for what? You know, and when you're talking about the husband, not pretty enough to keep his attention, to, you know, it just, you can,
Well, and it's interesting because now that we're talking about it, like, Trina's mom was very, very concerned about image, like, very much so, and really focused in on that as far as would do anything like have competitions with her when she was younger about who would weigh less. Like, lots of competition around that, and very much a lot of vanity that went that way.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask this question to you, and then I would like to put somebody else in the hot seat that's on this call. So the first person that kind of speaks up after I ask this question, first I'm going to hear Trina's those insecurities answer, and then I'll go to the next person. But where did you get, and this is an interesting question, where did you get your style from, if you have language?
My style.
Sounds like it's from her mother. Like your way of speaking. Is there anybody else that had an influence on how you show up in Trina's life?
How I as insecurity show up?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have to think about that one for a minute.
Okay. Is there anybody else on the call, is the voice of insecurity locked in the basement, that wants to answer the question, where did you get your style from?
I could go if nobody else wants.
Okay.
Okay. Hello, this is Helena.
Okay.
Allow me to have a question.
Insecurity in the basement.
All right. Okay. Well, hello, this is the insecurity.
Okay. And you're locked in the basement. Where do you get your style from? Your language, the way you walk, talk, carry yourself, as opposed to insecurity.
I hang out with anxiety because insecurity is pretty good of hiding. So security, she doesn't show up. She does not appear to be there. So. But anxiety is just the way she reflects. Yeah.
Okay.
So I show up through anxiety. That's what I meant. So I'm really good at hiding.
Okay. So rather than feeling you, she feels anxiety instead. Is that what you're saying?
Instead of feeling, I'm sorry?
And so you're the voice of insecurity, right? Instead feeling you, she feels anxiety instead.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Okay. And, you know, know that you can get your style from another voice in the corporation, or you can get your style from, like, a parent, a teacher. Like, me, the voice of insecurity, let me just see where I got my style from.
From where?
I got it from my dad.
Yeah.
From Kristen's dad. You know, like, I'm the voice of insecurity, and how I show up is sensitiveness. And, it, you know, can almost be a form of fighting for her life. And as a way to not deal with me. And that whole style around me, she learned and inherited from her father. So for you, anxiety, is that a style that she learned from a person in her life You know,
could be.
Okay.
Right, from the mother. But the biting of the nails, I have no idea from where I got it.
Okay.
Could be from the brother.
So it's the voice of insecurity. Is that you when she's biting her nails? Like, what is that to you? Is she paying attention to you? Is she doing that as a way to ignore you? Like, what is that?
Who, Halina? Towards insecurity?
Yeah. Yes.
Probably suppressing it, yeah.
Okay. And oftentimes, biting of nails is a nervousness, like a fidgeting. And I talk about how when people don't want to deal with unpleasant emotions, they might fight them, you know, conquering and overcoming fear. When they run from them, like don't do scary things, they may fidget when they get around the uncomfortable feeling, like if you feel insecurity next thing you know, or fear, leggy bobbing, twirling of the hair, you know, biting of the nails. People freeze when insecurity shows up or fear. And beneath you, insecurity, can you see live fear? You know, so we're still keeping on topic. There's also faint, you know, which people can't cease the function. So all these ways that people react to you on the surface, you're still the voice of insecurity locked down here in the basement, right? And you're trying to get their attention. And, you know, you're seen as the cause for all of these problems. And the question was, you know, how do you cause problems for the self? Well, what I'm hearing is that the self doesn't know how to deal with you. The self won't deal with you. You'll shut in different ways. It's anxiety or defensiveness. Or she'll get really fidgety around you, biting her nails.
Right. Yeah, she feels uncomfortable around me, definitely.
Okay. So what is your wisdom? Like, what possible role do you play in helping make life special? What do you offer, Halina?
As insecurity, huh? I'm cautious.
Make sure you're in voice.
I'm cautious.
Sure you're in voice.
Yeah, to make
go ahead.
Right. Yes. So I'm cautious because usually, for example, she bites her nails when she's, for example, doing something, finishing a paperwork or something, because the biting of nails doesn't happen that often, but usually is related to, for example, a situation where she wants to communicate and be accurate. And so the insecurity comes to make sure that that will be accomplished. Yes, I will
right.
be sure that she would accomplish that goal, whatever she's wanting to do.
Right.
Yeah, I want her to do things right.
But she may fidget around you, but there's a saying then, a good horse moves at even the crack of a whip. Like, does she get motivated when you show up? Does she jump into action? Or does she just bite her nails?
Right. Right, because she does it when she's acting on it. When she's actually, in spite of fear, doing things. And yes, of course, anxiety shows up and I am there like being cautious on whatever she's doing, kind of taking care of her.
Right, like picture a man on a wire, like walking between buildings. You know, if there's some insecurity, you know, usually there's some wind, there's some movement of the tightrope. Like, there's something wrong. You know, it's time to retreat. It's time to, like, check in, you know, maybe wait for better weather, get a longer pole, a balance pole. I don't know. There's a message in you. And,
yeah.
You know, back to Tarina, too, when she's not getting along with her husband, all of a sudden not good enough, not pretty enough, like, the message is, like, hey, get your shit together. Like,
yeah.
lose a little bit of weight, maybe put, you know, put on a nice dress, make yourself attractive, you've got to win this man over again. Like, there's the wisdom in you. And yet, what do people do when you show up? They don't honor you, they don't listen to the wisdom of you, they do what is dead.
That is true.
Yeah. They try to get rid of you, they try to hide you, they pretend you don't
What do they do instead?
Depressed? They
And that explains the anxiety.
Right. And I think back, I'm the voice of insecurity, and just in reflecting on the fact that I showed up a lot when Kristen was a teenager. You know, there's definitely a lot of need for a person at that level of ego development during high school years to fit in, you know. And so part of her fitting in was hiding me and also buying the right clothes and saying the right things and acting the right way so to fit in. Like, I actually showed up and helped her be so, more socialized during that level of ego development that happens during teenage years. I also think about, as the voice of insecurity, how I had showed up during her breakups with men. And the I mentioned that a good horse moves that even a crack hole with. It's like I was here to help her get out of those relationships. Like, it made her either bring her A game so that she could reattract this man, or a warning sign that this man is not serving you. He's making you feel bad about yourself, like he's not your guy. Time to get out. And then Kristen would spend the next 2 years kind of learning from me and learning about relationships and what went wrong with that last relationship so as not to create the same problem in the next relationship. And so I was part of the growth process. It's like pruning a bush, you know, she shrinks down with me, and then the bush grows greater than ever before. Like, you're part of that growth process, and you're a great motivator, is what I'm saying.
Right. That is true.
Is there anything else that you can see that you offer, Helena? And let's invite everybody into this conversation. It's the voice of insecurity. Is there anything else that you can see that you offer to self?
Yeah, I have something to say. As a voice of insecurity, I'm a warning system that the self can be hurt. Like, the self is putting himself in a situation where he has potential to be emotionally hurt.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I just think back on the history of the world. Like, let's say a person in a community, you know, starts to feel insecure, and it's a warning system. Like, you better get your act together. You know? And so what feels like criticism, though, not thin enough, not pretty enough, not smart enough, not socialized enough, not this enough, not that enough, is actually part of the perfect design for survival.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do we do with you, though? We judge you. We think that there's something wrong when you show up. You know, people can get stuck in you forever because they resist you and put you in the basement and overcompensate. Well, allow me, please, for all of us, and I believe that was William that was speaking, so why don't we continue with you now. Let's take insecurity out of the basement and own it, honor it, and I'll put you in the hot seat. Allow me, please, everybody, to speak to the voice of insecurity, welcomed, owned, and honored. Who am I speaking to?
The voice of insecurity.
And I was hoping to hear William's voice, even though it's not William. Let's just sit as the voice of insecurity, owned and honored. You don't have shame around you. You see your value. You do have a right to exist. It's not a matter of why we feel you, but it's a matter of why not. Because life is an insecure experience. Spend a moment in silence, honoring the fact that insecurity exists. You can either do it in voice or do it as yourself. Any comments, questions? Just name how you feel right now. A bit of insecurity.
It's strange to take insecurity, like feel love as insecurity. It is weird.
Yeah.
Like an unknown sensation.
Yeah, I mean, it's counterintuitive, isn't it? I mean, especially with the New Age movement having such a huge impact on our society in the Western world, you know, where we seek to replace insecurity with positive thoughts, you know, get rid of it, let it go, rationalize it away, seek to understand it, of course, where did it come from. You know, we can get lost in that process forever, like I said at the beginning. You know, it's counterintuitive to actually own and honor you and see the wisdom that you offer. And let's actually take it to the next level, and maybe we'll spend a bit more time on this. I just want to rapid fire a couple of voices, and there'll be nobody in the hot seat. But just try each of these on, and then I'll allow a moment for questions and answers afterwards. So notice as you do each voice, when you shift, how you show up mentally and how you show up physically, just as a feeling. So we're owning and honoring insecurity by kind of going all the way. Allow me please to speak to the voice of, I am insecure. And shift now and feel this and say this like a battle cry. I'm insecure. And back to Zen, I'm just going to, as you're sitting as this voice, there's a Zen master that was asked at the end of his life, you know, what'd you learn? You know, how'd it go? And the Zen master said, oh, my life has just been one bad mistake after the next. Right? At first glance, the guy looks like a complete tool, right? 40 years meditating, and this is what you've realized, like, that you've just made one total mistake after the next. And it's like, it looks like he seemed to have lost his war fighting insecurity. He could have just said, as easily said, my life has been about one bad thought after the next. And you think, that's pathetic. Like, wasn't he able to fix his faults, get rid of his insecurities, improve upon his virtues, like all those things that we pride humans for being able to accomplish. But if you look again at what he says, in his answer we find our primary Zen lesson. Like, it's a brilliant answer. It's such a brilliant answer that it's still talked about 1,000 years later. You know, what did you learn? I've learned that my life has been one mistake, one bad mistake after the next, one bad thought after the next. My guess is he had a smile on his face when he said it. He was basically saying, I've learned that I'm insecure. And as the voice says, I'm insecure, but this is a meditation, this is a Zen moment. Of course you're insecure. You know, we're on this little blue marble hurling through space. People say mean things. There's a possibility of divorce. There are thinner people, prettier people, richer people, smarter people. Can we say this with pride? Or do we say it with shame? And I believe that Zen monks say that. So again, they're speaking the voice of, I am insecure. There's just been another moment of silence as the voice of, I'm insecure. Owned and honored with pride. There's some interference in the call. If whoever, if you think it's coming from them, if you could mute, that would be great. Next voice. Allow me please to speak to the voice of, you are insecure. So take this realization externally and look around to the other people on this call. See the voice of, you are insecure. Again, if you think that you're the one that's making all the static or the noise, if you could mute yourself, that would be great. You are insecure. Like where we look out on the world and we look at other people, at the human experience, and sometimes it's just normal and natural. Not just for you to feel insecure, but all the people around you. Now, what if we could say to each other, I see that you feel insecure right now. Tell me more. We can do this if we don't resist our own human experience, you know, knowing that that's what our humans go through. And then you have compassion and empathy for other people when they go through their insecurity. So shifting to the next voice, it started with, I am insecure, then you went to, you're insecure. And now we're going to look at it. And it can be anything. It could be a dog. It could be a culture. It could be a church. It could be a house, a building. It could be the ocean. It could be the earth. Allow me please to speak the voice of it. Is insecure. It could be life itself. I mean, it suggests many things. It is insecure. To sit as it is insecure, whatever it is to you. And then the final shift is it's all insecure. Allow me please to speak to the voice of it's all insecure. Global insecurity. Heck, universal insecurity. Infinite insecurity. So be that voice now. And just become aware of the enormity of the insecurity, not just of this person, but all of it. You, it, universe, and beyond. So the insecurity is where we go with the river. You know, wherever this river is meant to take us. Zen is definitely not about getting rid of the bad parts about you, about witnessing them like cloud passing in the sky. Like, oh, look at that, a negative thought, an insecure thought. Oh, look at that, there's a positive thought. Not failure on your part or success. It just is. And once you become able to do this and see this, the fundamental nature of just being insecure, which is our birthright, and your experience with insecurity will shift and your life will change. And what happens next is you may still be insecure, but you care less. You have a bigger perspective. Because the insecurity is just not that big of a deal. And I mentioned at the beginning of this call that I just have gone through the most insecure year of my life. And yes, it's been really, really hard. And I find, though, that it's just merely fascinating to be insecure. And I'm no Zen master. There's been also some struggle and some resistance to it. But as much as possible, I try to embrace it so that it's not that big of a deal. So bringing us back home, does anybody have any questions or comments about insecurity?
Yeah, when you embrace it, well, first, I don't know if it's only me, but today it's a little bit harder. Like there's more static or something, so some parts I missed a little bit. But got your message. And when you said that you embraced the insecurity through the time you're going to a situation, you do the exercise daily. You do it, for example, the day I was driving and I was thinking, you know, could I start talking to my voices while I'm doing something else, like, yeah, driving or, you know, chopping or not precisely sitting down with my eyes closed, which is I go deeper into the voice if I do it that way. Like, how do you work on it on a daily basis?
Well, for me, because I've done so much voice dialogue, it just has gotten easier and easier over the years. I don't really force anything. Mostly I just try to be aware. Like, this voice dialogue that we do is a great way to compartmentalize your life, and the koan or the riddle is to see how that compartmentalization serves you. And it's different for everyone. For me, I don't actually ever play with the voices. I just observe them. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, look at that. I'm feeling totally insecure. And the reason why I felt so insecure in the last year is because with my book, it's like it really is a popularity contest when you have a book come out. And I really wanted to be part of the cool kids. You know, I felt like I'm saying that I felt like I was in high school again. And I wanted people to like me. And I wanted to be one of the cool kids. And I wanted to be relevant. And I wanted people to want to have me in their podcast. And I haven't felt this insecure, I think, in my life because it's out of character to feel this way when you're 52. It's not out of character to feel it when you're 17, but, and I'm not going through a bad breakup. And so what I did in the last year and a half, is mostly I just found it interesting. And it made me realize how little I've evolved since high school, right? It's like, oh, my gosh, I thought that I was a more happy, secure, confident woman, but it turns out I'm not. And that realization has made me do a lot of introspection. So what I'm saying is the answer to your question is just be curious about it.
Yeah,
you know, like,
because when you said that, I think a trap precisely is to identify with it. It's like, because the same way you feel insecure about one thing you are a very secure woman since you wrote your book, since you went to give that presentation in front of so many people, since you went to the podcast. So it is good to acknowledge, but we're always everything all together. The trap is when we feel like, I am the insecure, I am the anxious woman, which I've been observing lately. Like, I know this anxiety is there, but I'm trying not to swallow that idea that I am anxiety because, you know, it's there one moment, it's not there the other one. So which one is true?
Well, they're all true. You know, one moment you're anxious, the next moment you're secure, the next moment you're calm, and the next moment you're angry. And, you know, it's all enlightenment. And, you know, in thinking about a further answer to your initial question, too, you know, to be fair, I've spent a lot of time studying with my teacher. I facilitate Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms often on a daily basis. Like, I have my work is my practice. You know, you guys have different jobs, and the four-step Art of Fear method that I came up with, I think is the fast track to having the realizations that I've had through I mean, now 16 years of very intense training with voice dialogue facilitation. And, I mean, my clients are my practice. You know, I probably have a client at least every day, at least one. And so I get to practice this every day. And one way that you guys can practice it without actually having to drop everything and start studying Zen full time, right, is this four-step art of fear method. And the four steps are, you know, beneath insecurity is fear. You know, if today's subject had been about the self-critic, you know, beneath self-critic is fear. Beneath any kind of negative or uncomfortable feeling or voice, you know, the 5,000 bad voices, you're going to find fear. And so this four steps actually works for anything. So if you do it every day, here's what will happen. Don't get too caught up on the word fear. You just do the first step, which is acknowledge it's normal and natural to feel whatever bad feeling I'm feeling today. And if you're feeling good, great, right? But if there's anything kind of uncomfortable, unpleasant, you know, do this practice, and there will be. So first step, normal and natural to feel bad, emotionally, physically, you name it. Second step, what am I feeling? Okay, I'm feeling insecure today, or I'm feeling critical of myself. I'm feeling like I'm not pretty. I'm feeling hesitant. I'm feeling afraid. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling, you know, whatever it is. The second step can be fill in the blank. Okay, what do I feel? Where do I feel it? Okay, it's in my head. It's in my chest. How strong is it? It's not that strong. Or, oh, my gosh, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed today, right? That's the second step. Just noticing the insecurity in this case, or the self-doubt or whatever it is. The third step is, am I putting it in the basement? Am I resisting it? Am I in my head about it? Am I ignoring it? Am I, you know, what is my relationship with that discomfort?
Right.
And then the fourth step is to spend some time just either addressing the resistance or feeling the discomfort. And during my year and a half of hell, I was in resistance to my discomfort quite a bit. And that's how I came up with this four-step process. It's like, because the resistance to the insecurity is the issue, not the insecurity itself. You get that. Like, if you get nothing out of these sessions, get that. The resistance to the natural flow, the river of life, including the negative, is the issue, not the discomfort or the negative itself. Even the word negative, I don't like using that. Because if you're in trouble with it, it doesn't come across as negative. So the resistance is the issue. And then we can also resist the resistance, which is, you know, a whole other level of madness. But, you know, so that's the third step. And then the first step is just spend some time with it. And you do this 2 minutes a day, you will get to know yourself so well, and you will move through any sort of traumatic experience so fast. And you're not, like, caught in the loop of trying to analyze where it comes from, because none of that matters. That's water under the bridge.
Yeah, I agree.
That's right? You know, just what is flowing through me today, and what is my relationship with it today? And it's fascinating. It's just this last year and a half feeling insecure has been fascinating to me. Next thing you know, like I was saying, you don't really, you know, you still may feel insecure. You will feel insecure, but you can't.
Right.
You find it fascinating. It's just not that big of a deal. Because you know in half a second something else is going to show up, as long as you're in flow with it. You follow?
Yeah, yeah. So the thing will be like, since we are getting used to this, and because I want to get really the benefit of the experience, like not dropping it after the fourth Monday, but really learn from this, would be to practice the four steps on the different voices, especially the ones that I resist the most. And I guess I would start finding out things that I'm not even aware of right now.
Yeah. You know, the Buddha is very famous for saying a lot of things, but probably the two most poignant, profound, and quoted things that he talked about is this. The first one is that the transient nature of life, you know, that we are constantly changing. And what I just referenced, you know, in 2 seconds something else will show up, is comes directly from the historical Buddha. So we are up to 10,000 things a day, and they're all flowing like water into, through, and out of our system. You know, like I was saying, here comes insecurity, here comes security, here comes...
right. Change is the constant.
Right. Like change is constant. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing that the Buddha is known for saying is that you possess all the wisdom inside of you. So you don't need, you don't need to go kind of external to look for the wisdom. And that's why I love facilitating this dialogue and just asking questions, because if I ask good enough questions, you guys can give yourself your own advice. And so when you start doing this four-step art of fear method, you tap into your own wisdom every time you do it. And it's your therapy session. It's your two-minute therapy session with yourself every day. What am I feeling? Where do I feel? How strong is it? What is my reaction to it? Okay? And then you spend some time with whatever is true for you, whatever is flowing through your system that day. So just to repeat, Buddha's famous for saying two things. You're constantly changing. Faster than the speed of light. And the second thing is you possess within yourself all the wisdom that it takes to be anything, to be magnificent at anything. Love, relationships, business, you know, math, you know, you name it. And so if you can find a way to tap into that flowing wisdom that's going through you like droplets of water, you will be unstoppable. And this four-step art of fear method will help you do that. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Well, with that, I put my hands together and bow to you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me tonight. Not only does it have an impact on me, but it has an impact on you, and it cannot even begin to measure the impact that it has on the whole world. So we have one more call on the 10th, a week from tonight. As always, please submit questions. Does anybody have any burning questions to ask before we say goodbye?
Not a burning question, but I will say, like Helena, throughout the day, the call today, at times it was fuzzy and hard to hear.
Yeah, okay. As well, right? A little bit, yeah, it was a little bit harder to... to be there. I really close my eyes and hold the earphones.
Okay. Would you guys make sure that if it happens that way next week as well, that somebody let you know? Because, you know, you don't, yeah, because there could have been some things that I could have done. And,
right.
Like I'm in a cement room, I could have left the cement room, for example, and gotten a different headset. So,
okay.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll make sure that I'm not in a cement room next time.
Okay. Next time. Well, but thank you.
You
so much, Kristen.
Okay. Good job.
Have a great evening. Okay.
Yeah, difficult subject. Good one, though.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.